This is a WTOP original podcast.
From Podcast One.
Coming up in this episode of Target USA.
The very first guest on the very first episode of Target USA was then Director of National Intelligence, Jim Clapper. And he said to us, Russia was an existential threat. 4 years later, there's still an existential threat, and he says there are some new twists to the problem.
What concerns me is that they have gone to school, I'm sure, on the revelations of what we learned in about what the magnitude of their activities in 2016. I fear that because of those revelations, that the Russians will have back-engineered all those revelations and will try to thwart our detecting what they're doing. So I'm sure they're up to their usual tricks because they found it successful. I just think it's going to be harder to detect.
His sobering assessment coming up on this episode of Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
From WTOP in Washington, D.C., this is Target USA. Russia
could render huge harm to this country.
North Korea's secret missile.
Capable of reaching the whole of the United States.
Dangerous terrorist.
D.C. is repeatedly mentioned as someplace they would like to seek an attack.
Cyber criminals.
Decryption successful.
America has a target on its back. And on this program, we investigate the threats, the people behind them, the agencies fighting them, and the impact on you. This is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
I'm J.J. Green.
Russia. They're a big problem. The government of Russia, that is. The Russian people are fine people, fantastic people. The country has a lot of wonderful history and cultural artifacts that we can all learn from, and I wish we could all go there. But the problem we've had, this nation, the U.S., is with the Russian government, not the least of which was their attempts in 2016 to interfere in the 2016 election. Now, the 2020 election is upon us, and one of the key figures in the investigation into what Russia did in 2016, Jim Clapper, who was the Director of National Intelligence at the time, he says they're hiding something. So we sat down for a virtual talk on this episode of Target USA, and this is how it started off. You may remember back in 2016, maybe it was late 2015, you and I had an interview. That interview was the very first interview that we did for the Target USA podcast, which now has something like 3 million subscribers. But that interview started the whole thing. And in that interview, we talked about a variety of things. And one of the things that we talked about that day was the fact that you said Russia is still an existential threat to the U.S. We were talking about ISIS and other things, and you said ISIS is not an existential threat to the U.S., but Russia is. You were well ahead of a lot of people, and you were still in your position at that time as Director of National Intelligence, who seemed to recognize that Russia was still just as dangerous as it was then. Fast forward to now, we see that there is absolutely no doubt about the danger that Russia poses to us. So I want to get you to let us into your thinking as we approach another election cycle and what Russia means to this whole process and the threat that it is.
Well, JJ, thanks for having me. And harking back to that interview, and I didn't recall the historical note there about the initiation of these podcasts. And when I made that comment when we had our previous interview, I don't think at the time I fully appreciated the full dimension of what is connoted or what is suggested by Russia being an existential threat to us. What I had in mind at the time, of course, was Russia's considerable nuclear capability. And they, between the United States and Russia, that's over 90% of the world's nuclear weapons. So Russia, in that context alone, Russia was then and remains a mortal enemy to the United States. In fact, since then, Russia has embarked on a very aggressive modernization of their strategic nuclear arsenal. And I think it was in 18, perhaps, that Putin made this speech. I think it was March of 18, in which he outlined publicly five weapons. And when he does those things, you know, there's only really one adversary in mind, and that is, of course, the United States. Now, what's changed and what actually makes Russia an even greater existential threat, I would suggest, is its aggressive use of information operations. Most notably, of course, in the interference in our election in 2016. And this is a weapon, if you will, that Russia has used against us and with great success. And they will continue to do so in our election that's forthcoming in 2020.
As you look at what they're doing now, did you have any idea at that time? Because I do know that you and your colleagues were later in 2016, if not already, and you may not even be able to engage on this. It may be classified. I don't know. But I guess a better question is, when did you learn of the danger that Russia was posing with this new or this different, this other type of operation, the information operation that posed the major threat to the U.S. Democracy and the election?
You know, that's a FAQ, a frequently asked question. When was the exact instant, the precise moment when you realized the magnitude of what the Russians were doing? And I guess my answer to that is that that revelation didn't occur in one day. The Russians have a long history, going back to the Soviet era, if not before, of interfering in elections, theirs and other people's, notably in Europe. And they have interfered in our, tried to interfere in our election processes going back to the 50s and certainly the 60s. So they have records of that. But never, ever on a scale, the magnitude, the depth of aggressiveness that they did in 2016. And, you know, as time went on and we understood more and more what they were doing, whether it was reconnoitering voter registration rolls in many states, obviously the hacks, their aggressive campaign and very slick and sophisticated on RT, which is the Russia Today network, which is it's funded by the Russian government, and obviously its editorial content is guided by the Russian government. A lot more slick and sophisticated than the heyday of the Cold War. So it was putting all the, and then of course we understood as time went on what the Russians were doing in social media, which is the major difference, is their skillful and sophisticated exploitation of social media to sow doubt, discord, discontent in this country and capitalize on our polarization and divisiveness, which they did to a fairly well and will again, I suspect they are doing it now and will into 2020 election.
So as you look at what they're doing right now, how does it compare to what they were doing then? Have you seen it evolve? Have you seen it become more sophisticated or by leaps and bounds, or is this more of a gradual thing? How much of a threat is it this time around, considering that we know that they are doing this? And I think
first of all, I don't have the accesses now that I obviously that I had then. But what concerns me is that they have gone to school, I'm sure, on the revelations of what we learned about what the magnitude of their activities in 2016. When we did our intelligence community assessment of January of 17, I think we kind of, in many ways, only scratched the surface. That was kind of the tip of the iceberg. And I've often referred people to Volume 1, the first part of the Mueller investigation, which is documented in great and very specific detail the nature of what the Russians did. And I'm all for that. That's great. I support the transparency that represents in educating the American people about what the Russians did and the threat that they pose. And it's another form of the existential threat. But I fear that because of those revelations, that the Russians will have back engineered all those revelations and will try to thwart our detecting what they're doing. So I'm sure they're up to their usual tricks because they found it successful. I just think it's going to be harder to detect.
So, sir, when you say back engineered, could you, for those of us that are not as technically inclined as you and some of the others in the intel world and certainly familiar with this process, what do you mean when you say back engineered in this case?
Well, I'm sure they went through, they've read Volume 1, and by they, I'm talking about their intelligence services, specifically the GRU, which is their military intelligence organization. And I'm sure they went through the Mueller report, Volume 1, and parsed out every single sentence, every single technical detail they could that was revealed in that. And they'll ask themselves, what is it that we did that allowed them to figure out what we were doing? How did they gain that insight? And they'll go back and try to backtrack it and see how we determine that what they were doing. And if they can, they will figure out a way to mask or hide or obscure what they were doing. That's what I meant.
So looking at what they're doing right now and based on what you just said about what they most likely have done, and looking at what we've gotten in the last couple of weeks are warnings from the National Counterintelligence and Security Center and from NSA and from the British even have talked about what they have seen are attempts to manipulate Americans and people around the world in some cases thinking about this election and the processes here. So considering what they may have done, gone back and sort of tried to perfect their craft and what they were trying to do, do you get the sense that they may, or do you think they may have some new weapons that we haven't seen? Because I've heard people say exactly what you're saying, is that they're a nation of chess players and their intelligence community are part of that nation, and they approach it the same way. So are we looking at the possibility of Russia having some new weapons that we don't know about?
Well, by new weapons, I think it would be new techniques, then new forms of tradecraft, but in an effort to hide disinformation. This is particularly true on social media, where they will do what they can to obscure the actual sources of their postings on social media. You know, the Russians reached, I think Mueller said, 132 million Americans, some number like that, through Facebook alone. And they had messages for everyone. Black Lives Matter, white supremacists, pro-Nazi, anti-Nazi, pro-Muslim, anti-Muslim, pro-Jewish, anti-Jewish, didn't matter, because all what they're bent on is exploiting the divisiveness and polarization in this country. And they'll continue to do that, but what they will do in that process is try to obscure the ultimate source of those postings and that disinformation.
As we approach this election, we're 90-some days away from it again, assess the threat from your perspective with your all of your 50-plus years of intelligence. Assess the threat that they pose to this election being essentially swayed right now.
Well, what, first of all, I think we're going to be confronted with not only the Russians, but others having watched what the Russians did will, I think, also be in play. And I refer specifically, given the state of the relationship with China, that I think China will also be injecting itself into the election process, you know, capitalizing, learning from what the Russians did. And we may have Iranians, North Koreans, and who knows who all. So it's going to be even more complex. And why it's so important that people question, be skeptical about anything they see, read, or hear on the internet, and particularly with respect to social media. People need to figure out ways to corroborate or validate things that they learn or think they're learning on the internet, because that is being used, that the internet's being weaponized by the Russians, who are the masters at it, and now others are going to do the same thing. Then we have overlaid over, you know, just all this concern is the pandemic and what the Russians will do to sow disinformation there. So we have this added complexity of the tragedy of the pandemic, and which the Russians will exploit.
Director Clapper, that is an absolutely sanguine, great point, signal point, because there are so many others out there who've used the Russian, or most likely will use the Russian blueprint to complicate things when it comes to disinformation this election cycle, and they'll use everything they can, including coronavirus, et cetera. And, you know, I kind of want to ask you, do you get the sense, based on what we've seen from this administration, that this is under control, this concern?
Well, no, I don't. I mean, I think a lot has been done, certainly at the federal level, by several components, notably the FBI, NSA, Bart Mahone, Homeland Security, and others. But I don't get the sense that there's an overall, first overall leadership for this. And that concerns me. I think, you know, I think too often we think about election security from the standpoint of cybersecurity, you know, securing voter registration rolls or securing the means by which the apparatus which compiles, counts, and votes and reports them, which is extremely important. But there's another form of security that I think is neglected, and that's what I'll call intellectual or cognitive security. And that's what I was referring to by people questioning. You know, I wish there would be questioning of everything is to see, read, and hear, particularly when we have many people who revel in conspiracies. And the Russians certainly, as sophisticated as they are in understanding our political landscape these days, will take advantage of that. So I don't, you know, what I would like to see would be the bully pulpit that only the President of the United States occupies to enjoin people, to urge people to be questioning of what they see, read, and hear on the internet, and particularly with respect to social media. But he doesn't do that. And I think that's regrettable. You know, Rand Corporation has written a book, published a book, which I think is very cleverly and aptly entitled Truth Decay, which is the demise of respect for facts, data, and objective analysis. And there's, you know, several manifestations of that. And that's what we have in this country today, is a bad case of truth decay. And this is not because of President Trump. This is a trend that has been going on in the country for about 20 years. So I know a lot's been done. I'm sure it has been. But I worry about that other dimension, which I'd call cognitive or intellectual security.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's very interesting you mentioned that book, The Truth Decay, by the Rand Corporation, because that was the source of the comment that I mentioned to you earlier regarding Russia being a nation of chess players. Christopher Paul was one of the people who participated in the authorship of that book. And we interviewed him for our series in 2016 called 2017, and The Anatomy of a Russian Attack. You were in that series as well. You may not remember, but I'll send it to you and you can refamiliarize yourself with it. But we used your comments from your hearing where you laid out the assessment of what Russia was up to and what the intelligence community found. But it was said in that piece that this was the era that Russia had hoped to introduce again and rain down on us, the inability to tell what's true and from what's false, and just make it very complicated for us as a nation to figure out which way is up, similar to what Russia has been exposed to in the Soviet Union to a larger degree for many years before all of this now. But I want to ask you this question that relates to all of that, and this is this piece about hybrid warfare. This is the thing that Russia's Gennady Gerasimov, I believe was his name, or something like that, introduced some years ago, which employs a whole host of different types of tactics that are designed, you know, to be used as warfare against an adversary. And one of them, of course, is the kinetic military type approach. But then there's the information, you know, and then, of course, disinformation, et cetera, information operations, et cetera. So as we look at what we're facing right now, is the U.S. figured this out yet? Have we embraced hybrid warfare? And where do you think we are in terms of dealing with hybrid warfare?
Well, I think I'm quite sure people in the national security apparatus, most notably the intelligence community and particularly the Department of Defense, understand what hybrid warfare is all about, and have contemplated it, and also I think thought about tactics, techniques, procedures, et cetera, for combating it. I'm not sure it's widely understood, though, or by the public, or the public's very concerned about it. Particularly, you know, in the face of all our current trials and tribulations with the pandemic and our economic crisis and the racial strife in this country, and I don't think hybrid warfare is something that is very much on the minds of the general public.
Should it be?
Well, sure, it certainly should be, particularly with respect to how adversaries, notably Russia, could exploit these very crises that we're facing right today. It would be better for a wider understanding, but I just don't think that's the case. I think people are more concerned about things that affect their day-to-day lives, which is the pandemic and the resultant economic downturn, and then now on top of that is the racial strife we have in this country.
Mm-hmm. Let's to sort of wrap this up shortly. Let's just look at where we are now from an intelligence point of view, knowing what the threat is from Russia, from other nations, and knowing how you feel about us approaching and dealing with that threat or not. A lot of people are looking at this election coming up and wondering, is this election going to happen, and is there going to be some type of interference that actually changes the way the outcome of the election? And I'm wondering what your thoughts would be if you were asked, and I'm hopeful that people are asking you what you think, because you know a lot, what your advice would be for the U.S. intelligence community and certainly DHS and all of those involved in this process right now.
Well, I don't think they need any advice from me. I think the intelligence community is going to be vigilant, as it always has been, about this, and hopefully will be free to report it, certainly to policymaking community, to include policymaker number one, and hopefully publicly. If the intelligence community is detecting activity by foreign players, foreign nation states, trying to influence the outcome of the election, that's something that should be known publicly. And frankly, we didn't do as well as we should have in that respect in run up to the election in 2016. So that's one piece of advice I would give. It's sort of gratuitous and unnecessary, is that if as these threats are detected, that they're made known to the American public.
What have I not asked you about today that you think is important that we should discuss?
Well, you brought up the election. I do worry about its conduct, its security, and the outcome, and the extent to which the outcome is accepted. If President Trump doesn't win, he's indicated ambivalence about that, which is I think dangerous, and is kind of laying the groundwork, as he did in 2016, for accusations about the election being rigged if he doesn't win. Well, he did that in 2016 too, and that really concerns me. And we could have people in the streets, depending on the outcome, for a different reason than we've had them lately. So that's something I do worry about.
Yeah, I've heard that conversation as well from some other people. Is there a way to deal with that from your perspective right now? Is there a way to stop that?
Well, I think if, not projecting the outcome here, but if the election's not close one way or the other, if it's, a landslide, let's say, in favor of presumptive Democratic nominee, Vice President Biden, well, that would certainly mitigate. But if it's close, then we can have, I think, a very tense situation.
And I suppose as well, if the president himself were to win by a landslide, then that would neutralize any concern about that coming up as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, if past behavior is prologue,
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Director Clapper, it's always a pleasure to talk to you because you are one of the smartest guys I know. And you're very good at communicating that smarts in a very humble and just a very palatable way. And I've always enjoyed talking to you about what you know. And I hope that I can continue to do
that. Actually, you're very gracious and generous, so I appreciate that.
All right, sir. Well, that's it. Thank you very much.
Okay, JJ, thanks. Great to talk with you.
Former Director of National Intelligence, Jim Clapper. I have to say, I love talking to that guy. He knows so much about so many things, and he's got great perspective on all of those things. You know, he doesn't just say, I know these things because I experienced them, because I've been around in the intelligence world for more than 50 years, but he says, this is how it's relevant now. So I enjoy talking to him. Coming up in our next episode, another guy that I enjoy talking to as well, Mark Polymeropoulos, recently retired member of the CIA's Senior Intelligence Service, decorated, intelligent, skilled, and he's going to talk to us about, and he's going to advance the storyline on what Russia's doing to interfere with the U.S. and President Trump.
There is some kind of fascination he has. Now, a lot of people wonder if there's much more of that or not. We're going to know once we kind of get a look into the SVR or the FSB files. What do they have on President Trump? What is their view of him? And ultimately, we would get that from you know, a penetration of Russian intelligence or perhaps a defector years later.
But Polly Moropoulos knows quite a bit about what Russia's about already, and he's going to share it coming up in our next episode. In the meantime, if you have any questions about our program or comments, send me an email at jgreen@wtop.com. That's the letter J, the color green, that's one word, at whiskeytangooscarpapa.com. jgreen@wtop.com. Also, please subscribe to our podcast, if you will, and please follow us on Twitter. We do some things there that are actually exclusive. You won't see them anywhere else, and you won't hear them on this podcast, but they're related to this podcast, and you can find us on Twitter at TUSA Podcast. Also, if you want more national security news, sign up for my newsletter. It's called Inside the Skiff. That's WTOP.com/alerts.
I'm JJ Green, and this is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
Hey, this is Jack Vanek from the Lady Gang Podcast, and we have been busy creating even more opportunities for our fans to get to know us with our New York Times bestselling book, Act Like a Lady, and exclusive Lady Gang clothing line with Express. But it all started with the podcast, and we've had some awesome interviews lately like Tan France, Kyle Richards, and Lucy Hale.
Literally slapped the shit out of me as I was driving out to pull over. I was like, I'm driving.
She, right before, was literally talking about the size of her husband's penis. Again.
And like, I'll read scripts where it's like 25 years old with a baby, but nobody can see me with a baby.
Yeah. Maybe just have a baby. So be sure to check out the Lady Gang Podcast on Apple, Spotify, and Podcast One. We can't wait to hang out with you.
Now, stay tuned for the latest headlines from the Associated Press.